As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's always nice to end on a good note. But for Chelsea and Emma Hayes, that just became a little bit harder.
It's all over. The champions are beaten. Manchester City strike a significant blow in the race for the WSL title.
So can Man City ruin Hayes' fairy tale ending at Chelsea? And will Arsenal have a say too? I'm Sophie Penny, and from The Athletic, this is Full Time Europe.
It's Shaw! She's in!
This week, I'm with The Athletic senior reporter, Michael Cox. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Sophie.
Great to have you back on the show. And we're also joined by The Athletic's women's football reporter, Charlotte Harper. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, Sophie.
Now, Charlotte just broke some big news about who could replace Emma Hayes at Chelsea. More on that in a bit. And also, don't miss our chat later with Raphael Honigstein about German star Lena Oberdorf signing for her club's biggest rivals.
It's a huge signing for Bayern to snatch possibly the best German footballer at the moment from their rival. It's a real sign of power shifting.
But first, a huge weekend in the WSL. Man City beat Chelsea 1-0 and Arsenal were 3-1 winners over Man United. Chelsea and Man City are now tied at the top of the table on points and goal difference. City are just second on goals scored and Arsenal are 3 points behind with 8 games to go. The title race has been officially blown wide open. Michael, do we think it's a 3-horse race now?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was a really good weekend for the WSL. Those 2 games at the start of the weekend, I thought both pretty entertaining, albeit in different ways. And yeah, Arsenal now just 3 points behind Chelsea and Manchester City. I think you have to look at the run-in and see that Arsenal have got to go to Chelsea. They've got to go to Manchester City. They'll probably have to win at least one of those games, I would suspect, to overhaul both clubs. But yeah, they're definitely in it. And I think it's going to be a really exciting end to the campaign.
Charlotte?
It's interesting how everyone ruled Arsenal out, saying, you know, no WSL side has won the league with more than 2 defeats. And now Arsenal win against United, Chelsea lose, and they're right back in it. So 3-horse race, bring it on.
Bring it on. We've said it's a 3-horse race. We will come on to Man United later. They're now 10 points off the top and 7 points behind Arsenal in 4th, with Liverpool only 2 points away. So we will come on to them a bit more. But the big game that turned the tide in this title race was Man City's 1-0 win over Chelsea. Here's Chelsea's Erin Cuthbert and what she thought of the game.
Top of the league at the moment, so doing pretty well considering. I feel like we're in a good place. I think literally it was just a technical error, and I think barring that, they've not had a lot of chances in the game. They came here and there was only one team that was going to score in the second half. I think attack, we've done really well, to be honest with you. It's not quite clicking at the minute. I think Myra's like coming into a new team and it'll take time. But, you know, she showed her quality. She shows what she can do. So we just need to keep building connections with her and around her. And I think we will get to where we want to be.
Erin Cuthbert, very positive there. But I wanted to pick up on the point she made about connections. And I know, speaking to you, Charlotte and Michael, before we recorded, you were saying that that was part of the key difference between Man City and Chelsea, weren't you, Charlotte?
I think Chelsea have had quite a lot of change. Hannah Hampton coming in number one, Natalie Bjorn replacing Millie Bright at centre-back, and Mara Ramirez coming in to replace Sam Kerr. So down the spine of the squad, there has been change, and of course that's going to have an impact. I still think Chelsea are very cohesive and a well-oiled machine. You know, those players know their principles, know their roles, but inevitably with new players coming in, both January signings haven't had that long to adapt, make the starting 11 straight away. And when there's a game of tight margins, those little bits of hesitation or not quite on the same wavelength are going to be magnified, especially against a team like Manchester City.
And Michael, on the other hand, Manchester City looked pretty cohesive, didn't they?
Yeah, they're very cohesive. I mean, the starting 11 that they played at King's Meadow, they were all there at the club last season, albeit Kiara Keating wasn't in the first team. But I think their only new signing last summer was Giroud, who sadly is out with quite a bad injury. But that does mean that, yeah, that they're just all on the same wavelength. And I think that some of their passing patterns were really good. The way that they build up from the back, I think they were much better than Chelsea playing through midfield. I thought both Hasegawa and Jess Park were brilliant at taking the ball on the turn under pressure and easing into attack. And of course, the fact that Chelsea didn't do that very well was where the goal came from. So yeah, for me, Manchester City have got more of an identity, and it comes not just from the manager and from those kind of involved with the women's side, but it seems to be quite a cohesive philosophy from the men's side as well. We know how Manchester City's men's team play under Guardiola, and the women's team have got a manager who was working in the youth section there, had the job of bringing through young players who could play in a Pep Guardiola team. And I think you see the imprint of that in the way that City play, whether it's in the midfield, bringing the ball out from defence, even the relationship between the forwards. I think Kelly and Hemp just know how to play as wingers in this side. Whereas I thought Kirby and Guru Roten, who, you know, at times, I think both of them individually have been the best player in the WSL at points over the last 4 or 5 years. But I didn't think they had any real relationship with Ramirez, as Charlotte says. I think I'm right in saying that Ramirez doesn't really speak any English at all. Forgive me if I've got that wrong.
Hannah Hampton does a lot of translating for her, I think.
Okay, great. Well,
I don't know how much Hannah Hampton is speaking Spanish, but yeah, you're right, Michael. Her English is very limited.
And also Hannah Hampton not ideally placed on the pitch if there's any kind of in-game discussions that need translating.
She'd be shouting
well.
Quite far. I think most of the other team would hear it.
Yeah, that is true. But yeah, just little things like that. I thought there's a couple of incidents where Kirby kind of shot when she could have crossed for Ramirez, and Ramirez looked quite annoyed, but also maybe didn't have the vocabulary to shout at Kirby. So it just seemed a bit disjointed to me. And I think, the wider thing is, what is Chelsea's philosophy under Emma Hayes? Their philosophy is they've always just been great at getting the best out of one or two individuals that are really in form. And that has changed over the years. Sometimes it's been Kerr. Sometimes it's been Frank Kirby. Briefly, it was Pernille Harder. Last season, it was Guru Roten, I think. And to me, it just seemed I wasn't really sure what that team was all about. Maybe the main player now is Lauren James, but I didn't think she had a great influence on the game. So yeah, for me, on the back of that, you just say City kind of knew what they were doing. And I'm not sure with the ball, I'm not sure Chelsea did.
Do you think part of it is also down to, just as Charlotte said, those big names who are missing? You made a really good point in your article in The Athletic, Charlotte, that if Man City were missing Alex Greenwood and Bunny Shaw, would we be having a totally different conversation here? I thought that was quite interesting. And obviously Chelsea had a penalty shout, didn't they, for Alex Greenwood's challenge on Ramirez. So it was tighter than it all seemed, don't you think, Charlotte?
Yeah. Definitely tight game. And I think a fair result would have been 1-1, considering the chances that Chelsea made, albeit in the last 10 minutes of the game. Jelena Kankovic had a great opportunity, fine double save from Kiara Keating. Chelsea have their injury issues. Emma Hayes is not going to use that as an excuse. As I just mentioned, there are two big players in Bright and Kerr. Regarding the penalty shout, Ramirez doesn't get a real touch on the ball. Defender doesn't get a touch. You have seen them given in the past, but Manchester City are Chelsea's biggest threat, hands down.
I mean, it's worth pointing out that City did have Giroud out injured. I mean, she's maybe been their best player this season. So Yeah, okay. Chelsea without two players, but I think City without a key player as well.
True, but Jill Ward's replacement, Jess Park, as you mentioned before, Michael, was very impressive. Here's Jess herself on how she thought the game went.
I know, I'm just enjoying this new position, you know. I'm enjoying having a bit of like freedom in the middle and, you know, working my feet and working with the girls around me. I've got a massive, big group of girls around me who are excellent, and credit to them, they help me out a lot. So yeah, it's been real fun.
She also added that Gareth Taylor has given her a lot of confidence. Do you think that's a bright spark for England and Manchester City, Michael?
Yeah, I remember watching her play roughly this time last year in the Arnold Clark Cup. I think it was in the game against Italy. And I thought she was excellent in that game. And in that game, actually, she was playing the Fran Kirby role, or what became the Ella Toon role. And it was kind of similar to this in that it was quite central. She's got the skills, the attributes of a winger. But I think she's also quite feisty. She can get stuck in. She's good in tight spaces. And she brings something different to that role. She can carry the ball forward really, really well. And I've been a little bit surprised she hasn't started more this season, to be honest, because I think she's a really, really, I was going to say talented young player, but she's actually, I mean, she's got quite a lot of experience, really, despite only being 22. She had a very good loan spell at Everton. She kind of just looks better every time I see her. So, yeah, I don't think she'll be losing her place in the team on the back of that performance. And probably timed it quite well for the upcoming international break. I mean, I don't think Kirby played that well in this game. I don't think Ella Toon was hugely influential in the other big WSL game of the weekend. So it's a lot of tough competition for places out wide for England with Kelly and Mead and Hemp and Lauren James, if she can play there. But the fact that she can play in central midfield, where I think that's probably been, certainly in terms of depth, I think that's been England's weakness over the last couple of years. I think she's a great option for Serena Wiegmann.
Yeah, exciting to see what they do in the upcoming international friendlies. And also one more point for Chelsea, they may have Millie Bright and Kat Macario available for the run-in. So that could make a big difference. Michael, you mentioned the other big WSL tie, obviously Arsenal beating Man United 3-1. We were talking about connections between players, and you're on a side of us as Arsenal is still trying to find those connections between players. I know, Charlotte, you noticed they tried something new out in attack. Do you think it worked in terms of cracking their issue with missing chances?
Yeah, dropping Russo to the bench was an interesting choice. The theory was that Arsenal wanted to play in behind Manchester United and the space that they vacated, and Stina Black-Stenius would be running in behind with Chloe Lacasse on the wing. But as Art de Roche pointed out on The Athletic, Chloe Lacasse was really direct in her wing play. But to be honest, I think United flattered Arsenal. Yes, Arsenal forced the errors, but United were the architects of their own downfall for all three goals. So I don't think Arsenal have just waved a magic wand and their effectiveness in front of goal has gone away. We've known that has been an issue in this season for Arsenal. I think for Arsenal, it all comes down to consistency. I think individuals did very well against Manchester United on Saturday. But yeah, and they have changes in their squad as well. Lacasse, Sabrina D'Angelo, the goalkeeper, and Emily Fox going away for the Gold Cup as well. So further disruption for them. They had a makeshift back line with Williamson and a hamstring injury. And if you look back to last year, that was probably one of the best centre-back pairings with Leah Williamson and Raffaele. I wasn't impressed with Laia Cadena. I thought she looked quite nervy at the back. Lotta Wiebe-Moi had a very good game. But yeah, just these changes, which is where you want stability. It's not going to be easy for Arsenal, but they're right back in it.
They certainly are. Michael, what do you make of that point Charlotte said about United being the architects of their own downfall? We've had a lot of listener questions in, and they're essentially all asking the same thing. Mark Skinner is in the last few months of his contract as coach. From what you saw in that game, from what you've seen this season, the fact they could be out of the Champions League spots and the title race, is he the man for the job?
I think it's quite difficult really to see that much identity in the way that Manchester United play. Certainly at the Emirates on Saturday, I don't think they press very well. I don't think there was that much of a counter-attacking threat, really. Ella Toon wasn't in the game that much. It was difficult to see what they were all about, really. That said, I also just don't think their individuals are as good as Arsenal's. I mean, I said at the start of the season on this podcast, I think Arsenal got the best squad in the WSL, if everyone's fit, by quite a long way. I mean, you look at the fact that they didn't even start Miedemar, Freedom Ornum, Caitlin Ford, Alessia Russo, Kyra Cooney-Cross, obviously Leah Williamson was out injured, Amanda Ilisted was out injured. They've got so much strength and depth. And then you look at Manchester United and, you know, you just look at the way that Gemma Evans really struggled against Beth Mead. I thought a left back, I think she had a really difficult game. And I think the primary reason Manchester United are not really part of the title race, well, they're definitely not part of the title race now, they just don't have as good players. And I mean, maybe you would say the one player who would definitely get into the Arsenal team of the Manchester United players who started on Saturday would be Mary Earps. And obviously there's been a lot of links with Arsenal over the last two transfer windows. So, yeah, I think there are question marks about the direction of Manchester United, but I'm not sure that's all about the manager. I think it's still something deeper. As with the men's side, I just don't think they have the leadership off the pitch. And you can see that on the pitch.
Charlotte, how much say do you think Mark Skinner has in that process? Because I know that obviously they didn't recruit anyone in January and there are big holes, aren't there, in the quality that they haven't managed to replace this season.
I think Mark Skinner, from my understanding, has conversations with his head of recruitment of, you know, which players they're looking for, who they want to target. But he's not in control of the budget. He can only say, you know, I'd recommend this player or that would be a good fit for me tactically. But other than that, that's all he can do. He doesn't have the keys to unlock the whole bank. But it's not as if Manchester United haven't invested. You know, they brought in Melvin Mallard from Lyon, Fallon Tullis-Joyce as a second goalkeeper, Gabby George, who's done her ACL, Hinata Miyazawa, she was the top scorer in the World Cup, but she's a midfielder. She's not an out-and-out number nine striker. Jay-Z from Barcelona, but Barcelona were happy to let her go for a reason. So they did sign plenty of players in the summer. I just don't think they were up to scratch and the best fit for Manchester United. They haven't replaced in terms of the quality. But yes, of course, fingers will be pointed at Mark Skinner. But as I've said before on this podcast, it's not like you're going to get a new manager in and everything's going to change. They lost their assistant, Martin Ho. And I think that's quite telling because he was really the motivator and the driver in terms of the tactics and the coaching sessions on the training field. So yeah, Manchester United look lost at the moment.
They've actually made quite good progress considering they haven't been in the WSL for that long. And yet they're still miles off where we kind of expect them to be.
Right, to wrap this up, who do you fancy to win the WSL? Who's going to win that race?
I always think Chelsea will just about get the job done. I don't think they're in great shape at the moment for various reasons, including injuries. And I really do think the Hayes thing has probably affected them. There's also an argument that they will be so focused more than ever on winning the Champions League, that I do think it could well affect their league form. So I wouldn't be surprised if someone else sneaks in. But neither City or Arsenal are massively convincing at this point, we have to be honest. And so I would still give Chelsea the edge.
Charlotte?
I backed Chelsea at the start and I'm still sticking with them. I think it'll be crucial to see how Millie Bright adapts when she comes back in. And as you said, Kat Macario, Lauren James has been at times scintillating and then just faded out of games. They really need their top players to be a kind of 10 out of 10 throughout, and they're competing on all four fronts, the only team to do so. Emma Hayes always says this every season, the team that goes furthest in the Champions League is at the most disadvantaged to win the league. But yeah, still backing Chelsea. I think City will be the ones that get closest to them.
We'll have to wait and see. It's international break next. Then the big games coming up. Chelsea playing Arsenal in March and Man City facing the Gunners in May. More on Chelsea and the big news Charlotte just broke next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to Full Time Europe from The Athletic.
Charlotte just broke the news that Lyon head coach Sonia Bompaster is Chelsea's chosen candidate to take over when Emma Hayes leaves this summer to manage the US women's national team. As exec producer Abby said, Casey Stoney was meant to be leading the race, but Sonia Bompaster. Thank you. Thank you very much.
It works much better in audio format than in text format.
Yeah, definitely.
It?
I love that. I think we have to give a massive shout out to Abby.
There we go.
She didn't get enough credit for that.
On a more serious note, for people who don't know much about Sonia Bompaster, who didn't listen to last week's episode, which did talk about Lyon a lot, who is she?
So, Sonia Bompaster, 43-year-old Lyon head coach. First of all, very experienced player, 156 caps for France, and captained Lyon to Champions League titles in 2011 and 2012. So been there, done it from a player perspective. She actually played under Hayes in 2010 at Washington Freedom, so a team in the Women's Professional Soccer Championship in the United States. And she was a part of a team with Hamara Sawa and Abby Wambach. Player who has proven her worth. She then retired in 2013 and went straight into the academy for Lyon. So 8 years in the academy, working with youth players such as Selma Basha. And then 2021, when Jean-Luc Vasseur was sacked, she came in around April that year and has been at Lyon since. She's of Portuguese descent and speaks English. And as you know, her long-term assistant, Camille Abeli, with her, they make quite a dynamic duo in terms of head coach and assistant coach.
Can you take us behind the scenes of what's happening in this deal? What stage is it at and how did they come to choose Sonia Bompaster?
So from my understanding, the club are negotiating a deal to appoint her and are talking to Lyon as well, because Bompaster's contract runs until 2025, as does her assistant, Camille Abeli, as well. There were various reports of shortlists going around before Christmas. Laura Harvey was mentioned. Casey Stoney was mentioned. Stoney has since signed a contract extension at San Diego Wave in the US. And Laura Harvey said, you know, she was quite happy in Seattle. There was a kind of video on Twitter how saw the Google search of Champions League women's winning managers. And it looked at Jonathan Geraldes, who has now agreed a contract to coach Washington Spirit as of next year. Looked at Luis Cortez, a former Barcelona manager as well, who's won the Champions League. Those names were jotted down very, very early on in the Chelsea manager search. Luis Cortez has now signed a deal with Saudi Arabia. So it's very believable for Chelsea to look, well, who's won the Champions League? We're missing the Champions League. Let's get a manager who's won in the Champions League. But, you know, they've made her an offer. There's still things to be ironed out. Nothing's signed yet. Nothing's formalised yet. There was a lot of chat about wanting a female manager. Now, I think those quotes were taken out of context. The club spoke to a handful of senior players to get a sense of the most important qualities they wanted from an incoming manager. You know, there's a natural preference to have a female coach within the women's game, given the physiological aspects, the menstrual cycle, communication. But that did not rule out a male coach getting the job. I don't think Chelsea can do that legally anyway. But the sense from the players was they want a manager who will win. You know, that was the most important thing. And I was chatting to Michael about this a lot, but given the dearth of managers, of female managers at the elite level of the game, there wasn't really an obvious candidate.
And in terms of tactics, Michael, we were speaking earlier about kind of Chelsea perhaps lacking some identity, being a bit more tactically fluid on the pitch. Do you think that Bompaster's tactics, from what you've seen of her from Lyon, will fit well into that Chelsea environment?
Well, I mean, as I said earlier, I don't think Chelsea have an underlying philosophy at their football club. And I think Bompaster is really in keeping with that. I mean, she's a manager who has been accustomed to working with one of the most star-studded lineups in women's football. Once you kind of take Barcelona out of the equation, because they've got great players, but a lot of their great players came through at Barcelona, so it's a slightly different thing. You're getting in the manager who was a really top player, who knows how to coach top players. And I think that's probably one of the things that they looked at. I agree with Charlotte. I don't think there are that many outstanding candidates who have worked in the women's game. And I think there has to be a realization that, you know, you're either going to be taking a real chance on someone who's a bit up and coming, who hasn't worked with anywhere near the caliber of players that Chelsea have, or you're going to get an appointment like this of someone who it's difficult to work out how good they are. Because if you take over Lyon, you're expected to win the league, you're expected to get to the semi-finals of the Champions League. And unless you really excel and win literally everything every year, it's tough to judge. So I think it's a really difficult appointment for Chelsea. And I think this is roughly the kind of thing that makes sense.
We'll have to see if that contract gets signed. But in the meantime, everyone should check out Charlotte's article on Bonpastor on The Athletic. Next up, the news that Wolfsburg's Lennart Oberdorf has signed for German rivals Bayern. Charlotte, were Chelsea interested in Oberdorf at one point?
My understanding is that they were not interested.
That's interesting, because there were rumours, weren't there?
There were, but apparently she was not on their list.
Right, well, more on that big move next with Raphael Honigstein. Thank you very much for joining me, Charlotte and Michael.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sophie.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
You're listening to Full Time Europe with Sophie Penny.
I'm here with The Athletic's Germany correspondent, Rafa Honigstein. Guten Morgen, Rafa.
Guten Morgen to you.
Thanks for coming on the show. So, tabletoppers Bayern have signed defensive midfielder and young German star Lennart Oberdorf from second place Wolfsburg. She'll be moving in the summer and the contract runs to 2028. How big a signing is this for Bayern, Rafa? And what will Oberdorf offer them on the pitch, especially alongside Georgia Stanway?
It's a huge signing because up until now, Wolfsburg ruled the roost in women's football in Germany. And for Bayern to snatch possibly the best German footballer at the moment from them, directly from their rivals, is a real sign of power shifting and of Bayern doing what they have done in men's football for decades, which is to basically steamroll the opposition if they can. And the fact that Lena Oberdorf, who in the past hasn't been all that interested in moving to Bayern, growing up as a Schalke fan in the Ruhrpott area, her agreeing, I think, also signals that she believes that there is a better perspective of growth and of success at Bayern than at Wolfsburg, which also, I think, marks a real shift in perception, if you will, of where the balance of power lies between those two teams. What will she bring? I mean, anyone who's seen her play knows that she is an incredible competitor, really, really strong at the tackle, defensively, non-stop hardworking, but also can play football, box-to-box energy, box-to-box intelligence, everything you want from a central midfielder, and German to boot. So you can see where the attraction was for Bayern.
It's interesting you say kind of a shift in power between the clubs, because Bayern are 1 point ahead of Wolfsburg in the league now, but it's really close. Obviously, Bayern won last season and the 2020 to 2021 season, but before then, what was it, 4 titles in a row for Wolfsburg? So that's interesting you say about that shift. I wonder, given that context, why do you think Wolfsburg actually agreed to this? Do you know any behind the scenes of the deal?
Wolfsburg had no choice because Lena Oberdorf had a release clause in her contract. So Bayern didn't even have to negotiate. They just triggered that clause. I understand it had to be done by March, which explains the timing. And it's supposed to be in the region of about €250,000, which also is in line with her wages at Bayern, as it's been reported. So she's going to be one of the most expensive German footballers of all time. And it does, as I said earlier, I think signal Bayern's ambition to be as ruthless and dominant as they have been men's football.
You mentioned the timing there. I saw a lot of comments questioning how that will work, her playing for Bayern's biggest rival for the rest of the season.
I think people in Germany believe that in a situation like this, which happens quite often in men's football, the professionalism of the person in question is beyond reproach, and that they will try absolutely everything to go out with a bang and do everything they can. If they weren't, then I think their own status in the game would be undermined. And part of the reason why a club like Bayern and other English clubs, as far as I understand, were so interested in her was because she does embody that professionalism and that never say their attitude. And I don't think that's going to change at all.
It'll be exciting to see her in a Bayern shirt next season alongside Georgia Stanway. Thank you so much for joining me, Rafa. Dankeschön.
You're very welcome.
Oberdorf will be hoping to help Germany qualify for the Olympics over this international break as they battle Spain and the Netherlands for two Olympic spots from the Nations League finals. We'll be back on Thursday next week for a full analysis of that. For more on everything we've been chatting about, head to The Athletic. It's just $1.99 a month for 12 months. Search theathletic.com/WSL to sign up. We'd love it if you left us a rating and a review, and please hit follow on your podcast feed. Send in your questions to fte@theathletic.com or at @theathleticfc on Twitter and Instagram. See you next Thursday. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Full Time Europe, part of the Athletic Football Podcast Network. The producer was Sophie Penny and the executive producer was Abby Patterson. To discover and listen to other great Athletic podcasts just like this one, including our brand new daily football briefing, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.